Joining us now are our regular political observers, E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and Georgetown University, and David Brooks of The New York Times. Welcome once again to both of you.
Thank you.
Back.
Looking ahead to the third and last presidential debate, I want to hear from both of you what you'd really like to hear discussed and said in this debate. David Brooks.
A little reality would be interesting, but totally unexpected. This debate, I suspect, is going to have the feel of a debate between two guys who answer the question, suppose you just won the lottery, what would you spend your money on? Because they're going to offer a ton of promises, none of which have any relationship to what they can actually accomplish when they govern. They're going to face the deficits. They're going to face a closely divided Congress. I think when John Kerry made that promise not to cut taxes on the bottom 98%, he almost ruled out his health care plan because there's just not going to be enough money from raising taxes moderately on the upper 2% to pay for the health care plan, all the other things he's promised.
I agree and I disagree with David, which is to say that I think the Concord Coalition did an interesting study of the two plans. And what you saw is that George Bush's long-term promises are about big tax cuts and very little new spending. John Kerry's plans, on the other hand, call for those tax increases on the top 2%, and he wants to spend the money largely on health care. I think it's a really interesting choice. Do you want more of these tax cuts, or do you think you should spend more money on health care for the uninsured, especially children?
I want to ask you about something that was said in the last debate when President Bush was answering a question about judicial appointees, whom he might name to the Supreme Court, and he said something which struck some listeners and viewers as a little bit odd, which was he began talking about the Dred Scott case. It was a Supreme Court ruling that failed to overturn slavery. There's an article in Slate.com which says what he's really talking about here was Roe v. Wade, by another name, Dred Scott. Do you hear it that way, or would you?
Yeah, no. I've heard that said, and a lot of people in the pro-life community believe that both those decisions, Roe v. Wade and Dred Scott, were decisions that took a certain class of human beings out of their legal rights. And I have spoken to a bunch of pro-life people since that debate and said, "Did you hear it that way?" And they didn't.
They did not.
Maybe there are some activists for whom this was very subtle code language, but most people I spoke to, including people who were quite strongly pro-life, figure their reaction was, "What? You know, there goes the Kansas-Nebraska territory."
Of course, the Dred Scott decision was actually a fairly conservative decision in that it emphasized states' rights and property rights. But it does mean something to some people in the pro-life community. President Bush has been very good at sending those kind of messages where everybody else who listens to it thinks one thing and certain communities think another. He talked, I believe, in one of his State of the Union messages about the wonder-working power of faith-based organizations. That comes from a Christian hymn. Mm-hmm. A lot of Christians heard it that way.
Yeah, I think, well, as far as the wonder-working power of prayer, I don't think that's coded messages. I think Bush is comfortable talking in faith terms, as Bill Clinton was, and as John Kerry is not. And I've been a little surprised, actually, as the debates have unfolded, that Bush has not talked about his faith a little more, has not really been himself as much as he could be, which would be a stark and, I think, advantageous contrast with Kerry, who's a more secular person.
Well, on the eve of the last event of the debate season, I'd like to hear both of you give us some appraisal of what you think so far the debates have gotten us and what we might expect after the debate season, apart from the World Series. David?
Well, you just look at the polls. We entered the debate season with President Bush up by 5 or 6 points, I suppose. Now we are on the eve of the third debate, and Bush is up maybe 1 point. Mm-hmm. So clearly this has been a good period for Kerry. And I think it's a number of things. One, Kerry's reputation in the world at large was so negative, no matter how badly you thought of him, he's not that bad. But on the other hand, he's done a very consistent and good job in these debates where the president is not. I guess what strikes me about this period is how this is really an argument about character more than policies. And people have taken a look at the two guys over these 2 weeks, and they've seen what they didn't expect to see from President Bush, sort of wavering mood, wavering attitude, where they've seen pretty much consistency from John Kerry.
EJ?
I think what you've seen is President Bush suddenly being put on the defensive, having to answer a lot of questions he didn't have to answer before face-to-face. He didn't do a lot of news conferences. He hasn't had any confrontation in his campaign events. For goodness sake, opponents have gotten arrested for trying to show up. Critics have been arrested. And so I think that you've really changed the trajectory of the argument into an argument about what kind of president is George Bush, and that John Kerry has been at least good enough to look a lot better than undecided voters thought he would look when this process started.
And coming up in the last lap of the campaign after the debates, what should we expect?
a lot of viciousness. It's common thought among Democrats that if Bush is still trailing or if this race still looks like one Kerry can win, you're going to see a lot of nasty stuff on the web and elsewhere coming at Kerry. I hope that's not true, but we'll see if it is.
And do Republicans expect lots of nasty stuff coming at them if it looks close?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're in the stupid season. I mean, if you talk to people in both campaigns, they're sort of vaguely embarrassed by the crudity with which they have to campaign, the way they have to resolutely...
With which they have to campaign?
Well, that's the judgment that they all make. They say, you know, we have to insult the intelligence of the American people to get elected. You know, they feel they're sort of vaguely embarrassed by the way they have to campaign now. John Edwards, you know, in part of the deterioration of rhetoric, promised the other day to that he basically promised the Kerry campaign would deliver immortality.
Arise and walk, Reeve, he said. There's another coded message.
That Christopher Reeve, if Kerry was president, would arise and walk. That's sort of the deterioration of what we're in for. It's a good time to go to Ireland.
Thanks to both of you. David Brooks of the New York Times, E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post.
Thank you.